Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and Robert Duncan McNeil. Woohoo! I know everyone's listening going, hey, what is
everybody.
Going on?
Hi.
What is happening? We're actually in the same room.
Together. We're in the same space. It's crazy.
It is crazy. It really is crazy, but we're here.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
We're here in Utah. Garrett had come up for a surprise visit. And so here we are recording an episode from the kitchen in Utah.
Yeah, that's it. And we should say what it's about. We should say what the surprise visit is. Robbie clearly is a huge Georgia Bulldogs fan.
Wearing my cap today.
The national championship was yesterday. I know when you guys see this episode, it'll be later, but it was yesterday. And as a surprise, I booked a ticket, rented a car, drove to his house. I don't even know where I trusted my navigation. I could have been lost, right?
You found it.
I showed up and surprised him, and he was truly surprised.
I was
shocked. Had no clue. And the funny thing was, the day before, Robbie was like, we really need to make sure we get some more episodes recorded and banked and everything, and so can we record tomorrow? And I said, I've got a full slate of appointments that I've got to make all day. And he's like, really?
Like,
what's so important?
What's so important? What, we could just do an episode. We need to get an episode done.
It was so funny.
Like, I don't know. Let me see if I can squeeze.
I could at least do the intro. And I gave him some times. I said, well, it could be at 8:30 a.m. or 2:30 p.m. because I knew I would get to his house around 2:30. And he says, 8:30, I've got a vet appointment. We can't make that. I said, okay, well, we'll do the intro. We'll do it in the afternoon.
We'll do the afternoon.
And I've been holding this secret in for a couple of weeks now because I've booked this ticket for a while. And I'm glad no one spilled the beans, as in Megan. Megan could have easily spilled the beans, but she didn't. She stuck to it. So thank you, Megan. And we're here.
Big surprise.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah. Live and in person, not long distance Zoom. So this is awesome.
It's very cool. So so this week's episode is Drone.
Drone, that's
drone.
Right.
Yeah. So let's,
this is the second episode of
season five.
That's right. So we're into season five.
Yeah.
And last week, I couldn't believe neither one of us remembered anything.
Not a thing.
Before we watched it.
Yeah.
And
it
all came back to us. But we'll see.
We'll see. Let's go watch this episode.
Excited to see this episode and do this together.
Yeah.
At least this part's together. Yeah.
All right. And for all of you Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Robbie and I are back from watching Drone.
Yes.
Ooh, wow.
That was intense. Yeah, I felt like that was a real different episode for us. I don't know why. Something about it, because it did include a lot of our cast. It had all the elements. I don't know what it was. It felt a little different. In some ways, I thought that was good. In other ways, I thought it was kind of a outlier. So, yeah.
I was right about the guest star. I got that right.
Yeah, you were right about that. Okay, so what we were not right about was who wrote it. It was not Ken Beller. It was Brian Fuller and Brandon Braga wrote, and Joe Manosky wrote.
So I was right. I said that. I said it's probably another, because there's a chunk of episodes that we've reviewed recently where it's over and over again. It's Braga and Manosky. So I'm right about that then, with the addition of Brian Fuller, right?
Yeah.
And that's Brian the teleplay. Fuller. Who's the story by?
Story by Brian Fuller and Harry Doc Clore.
Harry, yes. Now,
it's interesting because I guess I did a little research. It seems like Harry Doc Clore had pitched a story that they didn't want to buy, but it was something about, like, I think he pitched something about Paris goes on a mission and his arm is ripped off and the Borg help regenerate a Borg arm, and he became like a Terminator, half Borg, half human or something. And they were like, no, we don't want to do a gruesome rip off of, you know, one of our cast members' body parts. But that gave them this beginning of like, all right, well, if we don't do the horror movie, like somebody loses a body part, what if it's the Doctor? And then, so I guess Harry Dock-Clore went back and took out any gory premise and combined it with the Doctor. Yeah. And that's the story that they kind of went with. Although I think he did pitch something like the Doctor and Seven somehow combine and create a Terminator-like Borg, and they didn't want the Terminator thing. So they were like, well, we like some of this story, but we want it to have a lot more heart and character and feelings. So then they came up with, what if this is an innocent Borg, not a Terminator Borg? And then they were like, but how do we end it? And I guess Rick Berman was the one that said, you should end it with him having to sacrifice himself, like his human side realizes. So it was kind of a lot of different stories they went through to get here. Okay. And a lot of people contributing.
I'm going to have to ask Harry, who I just saw at the CES show. His company was exhibiting their robot, this Beyond Me robot, this very advanced robot, which is able to open up a Coke bottle and pour.
Wow.
And it was, I don't know how, but James Corden had utilized footage of Harry's robot on his show. They were showing, you know, he was talking about CES was going on. And here's a little clip of something from CES. And that's the only thing he showed was Harry's robot. So Harry was so excited.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I went to dinner. He showed me, look, you know, James Corden even, you know, gave us this huge, you know, bit of publicity right there to show our robot.
So wait, Harry Dock-Clore is not a writer? I always thought he was a writer.
Yeah. Well, he's okay. He's sort of he's a jack of all trades in a way. He's like the first guy to get like a double PhD at the same time. It's crazy. Like he's super, super, super smart. Writing is part of his, you know, repertoire,
but he does all kinds of stuff.
This guy is truly unbelievable.
All right. Directed by Les Landau.
We said Alan Craker. Okay.
You and I both thought it was going to be Alan Craker, and we were wrong.
It was Uncle Les, who has not been directing in a while, right? We haven't seen his name in quite a while.
Mm-mm.
And I do remember, yeah, there was a long break. And then, you know, every time we saw Les, you know, at least for me, I was always Uncle Les, there you are, buddy.
He was a good man. We all liked him a lot.
All right. Guest star-wise, just J. Paul Bomer, right?
J. Paul Bomer plays one.
Yeah.
The drone. Mm-hmm. And just to recap, so we saw J. Paul Bomer was the Nazi.
Like a captain or something.
Yeah.
Second in command.
In the two-parter. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And just a quick recap, he was born in Dayton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. His first job, as I always like to talk about, was Voyager.
Stop.
That was his first job.
The Killing Game? That
yes,
one
the
was
Killing
his
Game,
first?
Part one and two was his first TV. He was a theater guy.
His
first job. So since I can't, you know, quote a different first job, I'm going to go to his most recent job. And that was the movie Them. It was that kind of horror suspense film. He also recently was on The Orville. So we were his first job. And recently he was in the movie Them and The Orville. So that was J. Paul Bomer. But there was another guest star, Todd Babcock, who played Mulcahy. And he was in the transporter room.
Then
B'Elanna says, hey, come with me.
Yes, yes.
And of course, you know, as soon as we introduce someone who's speaking, who we've never met before, we've never met him on the ship.
Yeah.
Something's going to go bad for him.
Yeah.
Todd Babcock, that was the guy. He was born in Jackson, Michigan.
Okay.
And his first TV job was in 1996, a TV movie called What Love Sees. It was a period film with Richard Thomas, I think, from the Waltons. And
Todd
Babcock.
Wow.
What Love Sees TV movie. So there you go.
What year was that? Did you
96.
Say? Oh, 1996. Mm-hmm. So really, this Voyager was pretty early in his career as well. Honestly,
yeah.
Right. This episode would have been. Yeah, filmed either in 97 or 98,
yeah.
Is my guess. Yeah. So interesting. Okay. Thank you for the guest star first job and most recent job explanation.
Let's go to the show.
My haiku for drone. Transporter problem. futuristic drone is born, gives his life for us.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a sad ending.
It is a sad ending. This episode has a very sad ending.
Yes, it does. It really does.
Yeah, it'll bring you.
Well, I think that was a very well done piece of poetry. I would call that art.
Thank you.
I would say that is art.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go for our limerick.
I'm so ready for this.
Here we go. Prototype and Tuvix plots mixed into one. A drone is born. He's Seven's new son. He's curious and smart. Too soon he must depart. Though short, his life was very well done.
Ooh, so impressive, especially with the Tuvix and Prototype references.
Yeah.
Two titles from earlier episodes of Voyager. Yeah. You have to do your homework to come up with that limerick.
Bam. Mic drop. Hello. Okay.
Great job, Rabieka. Good job. Okay. Let's start off right now with the very first scene, Cargo Bay. And it's Cargo Bay 2. I asked you in a prior episode, is she in Cargo Bay 1 or 2? It's 2. Cargo Bay 2. Seven is looking at her reflection.
She's looking in a mirror.
Yeah. And she's practicing smiling.
She's making smiling faces. It's very awkward, actually. And then the doctor walks in and he's like, how's my favorite new Borg? Super friendly.
Yeah.
And she's super annoyed at him. She's like, I'm annoyed. I was like, why is she so annoyed? We realize that they're about to start a mission with B'Elanna and Tom. And they're going to go to some proto nebula that's emerging and survey it. And she's like, why are you coming? And the doctor says, well, I'm going to study the effects on the humans, on the crew.
Yeah.
And I love at the end of this. So they're like, let's go. And she's annoyed.
Yeah,
that he showed up. I guess she's annoyed because she was making these goofy faces and she feels embarrassed, maybe.
Maybe.
Or is she just generally annoyed in life?
I don't know. It's a tough call because if you think about it, like later on when they're actually in the shuttle, the doctor's not doing any studies. She's trying to take selfies. So it's sort of, you know, so it seems like he's just going on a joyride. So I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed with Seven, to be honest.
Are you annoyed again at the doctor?
I am annoyed.
This is a pattern.
It's not a pattern.
Do you see a pattern here?
No, I'm just calling it like it is.
Why do you hate the doc? No.
I don't hate the doctor. I don't hate the doctor.
It's funny that you say that because you're like, you're annoyed at the doctor. Seven's annoyed at the doctor. I'm annoyed at Seven. I'm like, why?
You could be annoyed at Seven.
And by the way, like this episode proves my point.
Yeah.
Because this new Borg drone is born.
Yeah,
he's not annoyed at everybody. So why is Seven, just because she's Borg, doesn't give her license to be rude and snappy and annoyed all the time?
Okay,
there's a brand new Borg, and he is like enthusiastic, and he's earnest, and he's kind, and he's nice, and he's polite.
So you're saying Seven should take a
from
the new Borg, right?
From the new Borg.
Okay.
And be a little friendlier. It is possible for a Borg human combo hybrid to be friendly to people.
Oh, all right.
That's what I would say.
That's valid. That's a valid argument. All right. Okay. So now they're going through the corridor. The doctor talks about how he's going to study the effect of the nebula on the crew. Now there's an exterior shot of the shuttle in space. And then we go to the shuttle interior and Torres is complaining about how cramped it is in a class two shuttle. What is interesting is Seven says, perhaps you should design a new shuttle, larger, more efficient.
Yeah.
And Torres goes, not a bad idea. Now this is the beginnings of the Delta Flyer,
What I'm thinking is this moment was when a podcast was born.
This is when it...
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm going to say this is the moment when a podcast name is born. Not the podcast itself, but the name.
This is the fertilization.
This is the seed being sowed. Right. Yes. But it starts with Seven. I had no clue that this was. I had no memory that Seven was the one that threw this in your head. Like it starts to germinate here, right? With that one comment.
I didn't remember this either, but this is definitely setting that up.
Well, let's be fair and say it's her comment plus Torres's affirmation of that comment when she
said,
not a bad idea.
One thing I just wanted to talk about was I was looking at the four of us in this shuttle, the old the class two shuttle.
Yes.
And I remember that set. You know, the only way we could get in and out was the back door.
That's
and
right.
It was a hatch.
Yeah, it was a hatch that came down. It didn't go down. It came down.
It went down to let us out. It would come up and seal. And
we walked on it, though, right?
Yep, to get out. We walked on the back wall, basically.
That's right.
But if they were shooting towards that, you had to go inside and then they had to shut it.
Yes.
And it was a little claustrophobic.
Very much so.
And so you put four people in there. Mm-hmm. And then I also noticed some angles where there was glass because they could take the glass in or out for reflections. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you would have glass in, sometimes they'd take it out. It depended. So if you put the glass in that set, up front by where you're driving, mm-hmm. and then you shut the door in the back and you put four people in there and a camera operator and an assistant and stuff, it got really crowded. I don't know if you remember, I was in that shuttle quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I would get so claustrophobic sometimes because you would feel trapped in mm-hmm. that shuttle because of the way the set was designed. There was just no, if they put the glass in the door up, it would get hot. Everybody's breath is like heating it up. Mm-hmm. It was just, yeah. And the lights and everything. Anyway, I started having a panic attack when I watched that scene because I was like, I remember that. It was so claustrophobic.
Oh my goodness. All the memories there.
I know.
All right. So back to the plot. So after, you know, this idea of this new shuttle comes from Seven, Torres agrees. Then the doctor decides to take a group photo, which Seven refuses. Seven's like, no, I'm not going to do this. And that's when we have a huge plasma shear that happens.
Yep.
Shuttle tries to get away, but it's caught in this gravimetric shear. Engines are down. They're in trouble. We jump back to the bridge on Voyager. Harry picks up a distress call from the away team. So clearly, Tom has sent this distress call because he cannot pilot out of this shear.
And Janeway says, beam him out right now.
Right.
So we cut to the transporter room and we meet Ensign Mulcahy,
yes.
who is now the transporter operator. We've never met him before, but he's got lines with Chakotay.
Right. But I just want to say, we lost that shuttle, right? That shuttle's gone.
Oh, yeah.
I guess, I mean, we go through so many shuttles and it's just like, yay, let's just beam him off of the shuttle. We don't even care about the shuttle. What about beaming the entire shuttle into the shuttle bay? You know, save that shuttle's life, but no, that shuttle's gone. And mm-hmm. right, we meet Ensign Mulcahy, mm-hmm. and he's the transporter chief at the time. And of course, as he's trying to beam everyone in, there's some issues with the patterns of everyone sort of like
can't quite get a lock on them.
They're going in and out,
radiation,
exactly.
And
mm-hmm. finally everyone comes in. Right, everyone comes in. But the doctor Fritz's or McNeil's, he McNeil's and his mobile emitter is damaged. And I wrote down, well, that's what you get for going on a group mission to take group photos is what I said on that one. Like, you didn't take one study. All you did was take photos. So that's what you get. So
Which I can relate to. I love taking a nice, you know, travel shot for my Instagram. Maybe he was doing it for his Instagram.
All right, you can always play devil's advocate.
Yeah,
on this one.
Doc has got a lot of followers on his Instagram, and he wanted to show this nebula and their trip.
All right, we go to the science lab. Torres and Mulcahy walk in there. Mm-hmm. Bellana runs a diagnostic on the damaged mobile emitter, and by the way, I just want to say
so. This new guy, Mulcahy,
yes.
who we've never met, is running the transporter.
We've never seen him.
And he's talking all over the place. And then Bellana comes in and she's like, Mulcahy, follow me. I'm like, since when did the transporter guy become your number two?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly you're setting him up. It's Bellana's fault that this whole thing happened. Anyway,
I don't know. Maybe Mulcahy and her have a special relationship.
Maybe.
Oh no. All the PT shippers are like, what's happening with this Mulcahy? Mm. It can't be MT. It's always PT, right? Mm-hmm. Paris Torres, not Mulcahy Torres. Mulcahy Torres doesn't even flow off the tongue.
It doesn't flow. It doesn't work.
No. But it's true. Like, where do we never seen this guy? But yet, clearly, this is her best engineer, right? She's got to go with her.
She's got to drag him from the transporter that he should be operating with her immediately because he's so important, even though we've never seen him before.
Yes.
Anyway.
All right.
They're in the science lab.
The diagnostic is run mm-hmm. on the damaged mobile emitter. As they're leaving, we have a close-up shot of the Borg tubules shooting out. Mm-hmm. of the mobile emitter and attaching to the console. So now we're like, oh no. So the audience knows, you know, something is afoot here. The next shot is the exterior Voyager in front of the nebula. We have
which was a digital ship. We were starting at this point in our show to kind of go back and forth between the model shots.
Okay.
And some digital and ship, but it looked cool. It was a cool angle.
Are you able to easily see that it's digital instead of
There is a, to me, there's a difference. It just looks a little too perfect, the digital version. Whereas the practical, the model shots, we only have, you know, maybe 10 shots, you know, the camera panning this way, the camera pan. Right. And so they reuse those shots in different kinds of backgrounds all the time. Right. And they started using these digital shots for new angles. So if you see an angle that seems kind of new, unfamiliar or specific at this point, it's probably a digital. They didn't go back and shoot the models again.
Okay. Oh, so like just to continue the captain's log, she's talking about how the proto nebula seems to have a mind of its own. It's still expanding with no end in sight, and Voyager is holding at a safe distance to monitor its growth so we can learn more about it. Since we are scientists and explorers, we need to know more about this proto nebula. So now we are in B'Elanna's quarters. She's asleep. It's 0600, but the doctor chimes in. The doctor chimes in because he is completely, completely obsessed, or concerned is a better word, about the fact that his mobile emitter may be damaged beyond repair. He's panicking because this will end his freedom, right? Yeah. He's used to not being confined to sick bay. So this is why he's messaging Torres at 0600. Now, did you notice this is the first time we really see anything revealing that Torres is always pretty covered up through the whole series.
Yeah, like, she's in kind of a spaghetti slip strap,
or like camisole slip or something, right?
And she says, okay, I'll be right there. I got to get dressed. From behind, we see her take off. The slip slides down and we see her bare back.
That's when she walks into the bathroom.
Very rare stimulated nudity from our regulars. I had Janeway do it in Sacred Ground. I actually added that moment for the vulnerability of Janeway. I wanted her to be very vulnerable and human when she went through her vision quest.
Yes.
This felt a little bit more like gratuitous. Yeah, we rarely see any of our series regulars' skin. We don't see their skin very much. We were always covered up. But I thought it was a funny bit. It felt a slightly gratuitous to get her naked and then have her throw the towel over the screen.
Right.
You know,
because he follows her. The doctor follows her from the monitor in her bedroom to the monitor in her in her her bathroom area.
And again, to show this desperation of he's like, I need to know if this thing is working. I need to know if I'm gonna have freedom.
Yeah.
And he pops into the bathroom and she's like, what are you doing? And I love his line, I'm a doctor, not a peeping Tom.
Yes.
Which was very funny. And then you see her, the POV of the camera that, you know, that he's looking at.
Right.
You see her toss she the
throws
towel
the towel on there. So now we jump to science lab, and the mobile emitter is now turning the entire console into, you see Borg symbols. Now, Borg, instead of the Starfleet symbols, you see Borg symbols on there. And cargo bay two, it jumps to seven, awaking. Suddenly, I mean, she awakes before her regeneration cycle.
Yeah, the computer says incomplete regeneration cycle.
Right.
So she has incomplete sleep. She's woken up.
Right.
And you can tell that something is wrong. You can tell, you know, and she leaves cargo bay two. We cut to the bridge next. Harry is in the captain's chair again.
Look at that.
Wham, bam, bam.
He's been in command during the night shift. Right.
He's been in command, and Chakotay comes in to talk to him and ask how things are. And I made a note here. Harry is super smiley for being up all night. He's so happy to be in that chair. And then Chakotay is super smiley. He's giving compliments left and right. Everybody, rumor is you're really good at this. And I wrote, are they flirting with each other? There's so many smiles and compliments. I'm like, what is this, like a competition? What's going on? I actually felt like you guys were goofing off before they said action, because there was a sense of like you were just about to laugh. There was so much smiling. I felt like you guys were Something was going on.
Okay. Well, this scene is the closest to our true off-camera, real-life relationship, at least with Chakotay and I. You know, I don't know if we were joking around beforehand or not, but definitely it was a very lighthearted scene.
I think there was good chemistry in it.
Yeah, there's good chemistry. But Harry's really excited because he had something to do. Because typically during the night shift, there's nothing going on. But he tells Chakotay he had to adjust course 11 times because of how quickly this nebula is expanding to stay away at a safe distance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that line that Chakotay says, "Is it true you make them call you Captain Kim?" was just to me, that was a dig by the writers a little bit, saying like, "Ha ha ha! We're not going to promote you. We're going to like, we're going to tease this. We're going to, we're going to dangle this in front of you.
Call you, Captain.
You just pretend to exactly." Mm-hmm. Seven does arrive, and then she tells Chakotay that the proximity receiver in her cranial implant has been activated, which could indicate a Borg presence nearby. So this is, you know, this is serious stuff. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, perhaps the nebula is masking a vessel. The nebula is shielding a vessel. And Harry says, no, there's no way. A ship wouldn't last 10 seconds in there. There's not even a Borg cube would last 10 seconds inside this nebula. And Chakotay tells Seven to go to sickbay to go get her transceiver checked out in case it's malfunctioning.
Well, then she goes to sick bay.
She does, yeah.
And then Chakotay goes to take over in the first officer's chair, and you head back to your station. He says, "Well, you know, if you don't mind being an ensign again." Do you remember that line? Yeah.
Yeah, another
day. That's the very end of the scene is Chakotay's like, "Well, yeah, back to work, Harry, if you don't mind being an ensign again." Yeah, I thought that was funny.
Yeah, it was forever ensign. Funny. Yep.
Cut to the hall, and here's our good friend, dear friend Mulcahy.
We've known for so long now.
We've known him so long and know him so well. He's walking down the hall, gets to the science lab, the door opens, and there's a green light inside.
Yeah.
And he starts to walk in, and he kind of walks toward something. Yeah. And first thing I thought was, why is he going in by himself? Like, wouldn't you immediately at the doorway when you see the change, which we don't even ever see what he sees.
Yes.
Exactly. But we see the green light. Wouldn't you call for backup or something?
Like, and if you're not going to call for backup, and you know what, everyone in Starfleet knows what a green light is. It's the Borg, right? So why? It's kind of like, wait a minute. Why are you pulling your tricorder out? Pull your phaser out, man. Exactly. I mean, do so. I mean, get ready to protect yourself, right? Exactly. So I don't, you know, it's like, it's like for you. You know the colors of Alabama, the enemy. You know that, okay? Just like Mulcahy should know the colors of the enemy. It's green. We don't. Yes, that's not.
We
Starfleet.
Know that Alabama has the wrong color red. They have crimson. They have crimson. And what they need is Georgia Bulldogs red and black. And crimson is the enemy. Anyway,
crimson's the enemy. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. The tendrils all of a sudden shoot out into his neck.
The tubules shoot out into his neck suddenly.
Into his neck.
Yeah. Then we jump cut to sick bay at that point.
Sick bay, doc scanning Seven, and all of a sudden she feels a proximity alert again. Yeah, she feels this Borg stuff happening.
Right.
We go to the bridge. Harry says there's someone's rerouting power from the warp conduits. He tries to find out where it's coming from. It's from the science lab. And now there's a force field there with a Borg signature, he says.
But then Chakotay hails Mulcahy. How does he know that Mulcahy is in the science lab? Did he look at something? See, that was a question. Maybe he saw on sensors that, I'm detecting one Starfleet personnel in science lab.
Well, B'Elanna said last night when they put the thing in the science lab for the data scanning or whatever analysis, she said, Mulcahy back here at 0600, you know. So that was his assignment. So maybe it's in the crew log, you know, like the assignment log or something.
All right. I'll buy that. All right. Sensors are being deflected by some kind of force field, which has a Borg signature. Mm-hmm. Well, time for red alert. Chakotay calls for Janeway, sends Tuvok and a security detail to the science lab. So this is real serious stuff. We don't know what's happening. Seven says she's going to join in and meet the security detail there. And now, you know, we have a shot of Seven and Tuvok and the security
Tuvok
team.
Tuvok and Seven with a security team. It was a really low angle shot pulling down the hallway in front of them. And I thought it was a super cool shot. I love those low angle. It's like, It's like the Ocean's 11 kind of shot, you know? Yeah. I wish they had done it in slow motion. That would have been cool.
Oh, that would have been super cool.
Walking down the hall.
Yeah, yeah.
But they looked really badass. And we go into the science lab, and in comes Tuvok and Seven. They approach this console.
Yep.
Seven says it looks like a Borg maturation chamber, but it has unfamiliar elements, she says. Right. And then they see Mulcahy on the ground.
Yep.
And the two holes in his neck from the tubules.
Yeah.
She finds nanoprobes when she scans him, that there are Borg nanoprobes.
And not just nanoprobes, nanoprobes that have the same signature as her own nanoprobes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she approaches the console. She says, because she's Borg, she can walk through the force fields, which she does.
Yeah.
Steps right through it, opens this small door in this Borg adapting console. And she sees this sort of Borg fetus inside, which I thought was a really cool vis effect. That was cool. It looked like it was in some kind of liquid and floating around.
Yeah.
And Seven says this is different than the usual Borg assimilation.
Yeah.
But there's something different about this.
Right.
So we come back into a little bit later.
Still
the
science lab. Yeah.
Still in the science lab. But now we've got this shot that's a point of view from inside the chamber.
Such a cool POV.
Yeah.
Not only the point of view, but audio. We're getting audio of
distorted
as if the fetus is listening and watching and seeing everything.
And I made a note. It's a long shot because they play a lot of dialogue from that point of view. And it reminded me that Rick Berman was always very concerned about what the point of view of every shot was. And he must have okayed this choice, because I remember pitching shots to him when I was directing, and he'd be like, well, whose point of view is that? Like, that's going to suggest, you know, if I was trying to do a stylized shot of a camera move or something, he'd be like, well, the audience is going to think that that's the point of view of some alien or something. And no, let's not do that. So he was very conservative usually.
Right.
So the fact that they played this shot from the baby's point of view for so long means that he had okayed this point of view shot, and they wanted to imply that this baby was starting to get a consciousness, and that we were supposed to, as an audience, sort of connect with this baby's point of view in some way.
Yeah. What's interesting here, my other note is, as we have the POV and the audio of the fetus, that you now hear Seven talking. She's surmising that the transporter malfunction caused patterns to merge. It's possible that some of her nanoprobes infected the doctor's mobile emitter, and that they assimilated the emitter and then transformed the diagnostic station, and Mulcahy's DNA was sampled using his genetic code as a template to create a life form. So as she's talking about all this stuff, and because you're hearing it from the perspective of the fetus, and you've got that whatever that sound is of the chamber, you know, just the chamber mechanics.
Yeah.
It takes the edge off of Seven's voice. Like, Seven's voice, typically when you hear it, it's kind of rebellious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's sort of like when she talks to Janeway, she's almost like has an attitude. That attitude is gone when it's distorted by the, you know, it's a very beautiful and non-confrontational voice.
Yeah.
When it's that's being heard. Yes. So that's the one thing I was, oh my goodness.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what my one note about this particular scene.
Yeah. But they realize that that is probably what happened. And so Janeway orders a level 10 force field and security detail around the science lab.
Yep.
She does not want to kill this fetus
until she knows more about what's going on. Right. Yeah. She doesn't want to end this life. But the other interesting note is
she's like, let's let this thing grow. Let's see what's up. And I was like, I made a note. Oh, Janeway, really? Like, you're going to let the Borg grow? Like, really?
Well, and then from the time that they first see this drone, and then they call Janeway to come down, and the drone has grown by 17% in that 5 minutes, you know, whatever it is. And then even Seven says the maturation rate is 25 times that of a conventional Borg. So there's some really fast growing going on right now. Mm-hmm.
In Astrometrics, they start to analyze what they're, you know, all the data they're getting from this fast growing Borg. Seven says at this point, when they're in Astrometrics, B'Elanna's there. The doctor is on a monitor. Tuvok is in there. Mm-hmm. She says that he's now in the fourth phase of gestation, Borg gestation, which is equal to about a six-year-old already.
Six-year-old boy already. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The doctor says he's mostly human. He's only 27% Borg right now.
Right.
And Tuvok says that the body's composed of polycutonic alloys. And the doctor says, oh, that's like my mobile emitter. So his exterior his body
is plating. Mm-hmm.
Is the mobile emitter, that very same futuristic technology.
Material.
Yeah. Outside, his emitter is 500 years more advanced than the current technology. So he's more advanced than any current Borg. So mm-hmm. we established that. Mm-hmm. The doctor also locates his mobile emitter embedded in his cerebral cortex.
Yeah.
And they say, well, it would kill this Borg drone to extract the mobile emitter.
Right. Because it's now part of his central nervous system.
Yeah.
Right? So it controls all of his autonomous functions.
Yeah.
And he will die if you remove it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
So Tuvok asks, his biggest concern being security chief is, has this Borg contacted the collective yet? Seven says, no, she's dampened his proximity transceiver. Mm-hmm. Don't worry, not yet. But what about when he matures? We're in the captain's ready room. Janeway mm-hmm. reads the specs of the drone: reactive body armor, multi-dimensional adaptability, internal mm-hmm. transporter nodes.
Internal transporter nodes.
That means he can transport himself anywhere without a transporter, which really everything she was reading made me think, wow, this is a cool organism, you know, being amazing.
Seven says he's going to be mature in 2 more hours. That's it.
Less than two hours.
That's right. But he'll have no purpose without instructions from the collective. And
right.
Janeway decides she wants to raise this guy, humanize him.
Yeah, because Seven says, hey, his Borg shielding is not active. I mean, he will be fully mature, but his Borg shielding is still not active. So we can terminate this Borg now. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Janeway was like, let's just see what happens. Right. She first poses the question, what normally happens when a drone disengages from a maturation chamber and it awaits instructions from the collective. So Janeway feels that she can, or the crew can help, you know, guide this or raise this drone to as an individual and to
as
be
more
a
human
member of the crew. Yeah.
As
then Borg.
More human, but she says, Seven, I want you to teach him.
Right. She gives
it's
Seven
gonna
that
be
job.
Like your first contact. She
yeah.
says,
yeah,
you're going to be Seven. You're going to be our ambassador.
Right.
And teach him about his humanity.
And we could show him what it means to be an individual. And
yep.
so Seven becomes, he's given the job of tutor. Basically, mm-hmm. tutor/parent in a way, right?
Yep. Go to the science lab next. And now in the science lab, it has become a full drone alcove.
Yes.
We see him fully mature, and Seven hit some buttons to disengage him. And I love how the tubes pop out. I just think that was a cool thing. And he steps down out of this alcove. And his first words are, we are Borg, state our designation.
And Seven says, no, we are individuals. We are not Borg, but mm-hmm. the drone doesn't get it. Doesn't understand.
Yeah.
So she decides she has to initiate a direct neural interface. And so she then does that, and she starts sending instructions to the drone. She tells Tuvok that he did receive the instructions and he understands, but all of a sudden the drone grabs Seven's arm before she can pull away. And she starts, you know, kind of wincing, and we realize
he's extracting. Basically, he's downloading everything in her brain.
Yeah,
he's all just her human memories, all of her knowledge of Voyager, all of her Borg memories, all of it, and it hurts her.
Yeah, it hurts her because he's all up in her neural pathways at this point, trying to assimilate every bit of Seven's knowledge. And she cannot disengage the link. She commands him to terminate the interface. Nothing. You must comply. Nothing. But then when she says, "You are hurting me," that's what makes him stop.
Yeah. And he releases her.
He does comply.
Then.
He releases her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But really a tension filled scene, because you're thinking, is he going to, what's he going to do? You know, and even Tuvok tries to shoot him with a phaser, right? Isn't that in this scene? I think he shoots him with a phaser and it doesn't even work. So tension filled scene.
So he's got the mobile emitter, you know, alloy plating or whatever, the futuristic plating,
and
his
he has
skin
shields.
Tone, and he has shields, and his skin tone looks different. It doesn't look quite as blue gray as most Borg. It's got a little pigment in it. And did you notice that the suit was glowing in the little cracks here and there?
Yeah,
it had little blue lights or something.
Yeah, they had these exactly.
I don't remember that ever in a Borg costume before. I think this was an adaptation for this, kind of one of a kind Borg.
Yeah, because regular Borgs, they have blinkies, they have lights on them, and little things that blink. But
this had glow underneath.
If you saw, they were tubes that were running where his ribs were.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, they were tubules that looked like it was blue fluid that was running through them. You know, so almost like that was his blood or something like that.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it was very cool looking. I made a note. They look like, you know, it's like glow stick stuff going through
exactly.
He's going to a rave. So Seven of Nine has a daily log, and she has she says she has activated the drone's linguistic database, and it is now capable of assimilating information. A direct neural link is way too dangerous, as she tried before, and she decided that the best way for him to assimilate information is using Borg data nodes. Mm-hmm. So that then cues the next scene, where in engineering, Neelix brings two Borg data nodes into engineering. Mm-hmm. And Torres is not happy about this.
No,
Torres
doesn't trust
this drone. She doesn't. She's wisecracking left and right. How many Borg hitchhikers are we going to pick up on this trip? I mean, she's just throwing out all these comments left and right. Seven hails Neelix and asks him to bring the first data node.
And Neelix is very optimistic with B'Elanna, by the way. I love his line when he says to B'Elanna, when she's saying, "I don't trust him," B'Elanna's like, "He could become very dangerous for us." And Neelix says, "It will become what we help it become." Yeah. I love that line.
Yeah.
Because that's a great way of looking at the world. Like, instead of looking at everything with fear and everyone with distrust.
Right.
You know, your relationship with people will become, even if you disagree, even if you assume that we probably, you know, could be enemies or disagree on this topic, your relationship will become what you make it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a great line.
It's a very good line. So now we're in the science lab. Seven of Nine asks the drone to assimilate the data in the data node. The drone does not understand. And so Seven assists. She taps a few buttons on his arm, and two tubules shoot out into the node. And my goodness, J. Paul Bohmer, without any lines, what a wonderful performance.
I made the same note.
Unbelievable. Look on
silent
his face.
Moment,
silent went moment.
From kind of cold
awareness.
He's feeling the human side of things. And not just the human, all of it. He's getting the whole lifetime of experience in this couple of moments. And he played it beautifully. Just silent.
Oh, so well acted. Yeah. And, you know, all you aspiring actors out here, you know, watch this scene, because this is a huge moment. And the look on his face as he's receiving this information, priceless. I mean, you just
it's warm, it's sweet. It's the excitement, the wonder,
the wonder and the awe of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could feel it 1000%. Yeah. Right. And once he receives this information, now he's off to the race.
Like, I want to see more. And with me. I want to see more. Show me
your designation is Seven of Nine. Your designation is Neelix Talaxian. This is a laboratory on a vessel. I mean, he's like a little kid, right? In a candy store. I am traveling through interstellar space. Why? And then this here becomes the newborn or the young child trying to just get more information. why are we traveling? Well, this is a ship of exploration. Oh, well, then I am an explorer and you're an individual and your thoughts are your own. And all this stuff is coming to him. And it was just mm-hmm. wonderful scene, wonderful mm-hmm. scene. He wants to get more information. He wants to assimilate more. Seven says, no, not yet. Your neural pathways require time to process this information. And plus you will need to regenerate soon. So she says that she's going to go and adapt one of the alcoves in Cargo Bay to his technology so that he can regenerate there. So she tells Neelix to take the drone to the doctor for a medical analysis. And she says to go with Neelix, but he follows her instead like a child as she's walking away. And like a child, she reassures him.
I'll be back. We'll
join him
soon.
Later.
Yes, I will.
Yeah, I'm sending you to school. Yeah, you go to kindergarten with Uncle Neelix, and I will see you later after mm-hmm. school. And so he's okay with it. Wonderful scene with Neelix and the drone walking through the corridor. The two security guards are behind them. And we see the drones POV.
I got to say, this was a moment where I was like, all right, we've moved very quickly with our trust of this drone.
Yes.
They've got this two-man security team, unarmed.
Yeah. No. Well, I don't know if they're unarmed. They're definitely not holding weapons on him, though. They're just walking. Yeah.
I didn't see a weapon near. I mean, maybe they had a phaser on their belt that I didn't see, but they certainly didn't have phaser rifles or anything significant.
Yeah.
And I thought this was a problem for me because I was like, I think Janeway and Tuvok and everyone would be incredibly cautious with this drone. And to walk him around the entire ship with just Neelix and two unarmed security guys, I was like, I don't know.
Okay. Well,
anyway.
Well, here's my question for you. When we are in that corridor scene, one of the shots that we see is the drone's perspective of the corridor, mm-hmm. which is a little bit warped. Is that what lens is that?
I don't know what lens they create. I don't know. Probably a fisheye lens or very wide angle lens. Yeah. And they may have added a little Borg CG, you know, visual effects to the POV.
Right.
But I did notice in this scene, it's a very long Steadicam scene because it goes all the way down the hall with no coverage, with a long conversation. And then the sick bay door opens and they go in. The camera keeps following them in. Mm. So I was thinking about the Steadicam operator. You know, that's a heavy camera and rig to carry, and he carried it a long time. It's a very long shot and very impressive for a Steadicam operator to hold the camera that long, and for the actors to perform the scene so well without needing close-ups and, you know, other takes to cut into. I just thought it was great.
Yeah.
But they talk about Neelix, basically, and the scene is about Neelix saying, you need a name.
Yeah, you need to choose a name.
And he says, there's only one of you, which gives him this idea of one as his designation. So that's where it comes from, the conversation with Neelix.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once we're in sick bay, the doc starts analyzing him, and our drone one wants his origin story. He wants to know where he came from. And so the doctor's kind of resistant at first, but then says there was a transporter malfunction.
Well, wait. He's resistant, but the drone is persistent because he says, describe my origins. And then the doctor says, well, that's a very long story. And he goes like, describe it now. Like he's really, you tell me now, doctor. Yes. The doctor goes into that there was a transporter malfunction, which then the drone picks up on, oh, I was an accident. And they says, no, call it a random convergence of technologies. And then the drone asks, am I unwelcome here? Mm-hmm. And so the awareness and just the scene was, it was a good scene. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a great scene. I did like the doctor's line. No, you're very welcome here. And he goes, after all, you've got my mobile emitter driving your neocortex. You're bound to make a dazzling impression.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he explains that's a joke.
Yeah. Right? He goes, that's called a joke.
And I love how the drone in this entire episode is always like a joke, a verbal comment or gesture designed to provoke laughter. And then the doctor says, I see you've got your mother's sense of humor. So it's clever lines.
We go to engineering next, and Seven is now giving him a tour of engineering. B'Elanna's annoyed. She's like, this is not a classroom.
Right.
She says, I've got 1 hour to control the expansion of this nebula, or Janeway's going to end this whole survey. Yeah. And the drone is sort of watching what she's doing. He goes, well, I can fix that. apply a multispatial algorithm. And Seven is very proud. You see this proud mama moment, and B'Elanna goes, okay, give it a shot.
And yeah.
Well, he steps in there. And
Balana's a little surprised too.
Yeah.
That he figured this out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he steps up to the panel, starts hitting a bunch of buttons, and it works.
Yes.
So he's showing his that he can be an asset here for us and be helpful and trustworthy and all those things.
Yeah.
We go to the ready room next. And the drone is there and he introduces himself. He says, our designation.
Seven brings him to meet Janeway. So
yep. Seven brings him in there to meet Janeway. He's introducing himself. He says, our designation is, and then he catches himself and he goes, my designation.
Yeah.
Which I love that little moment. Yeah,
that was a great moment. Great.
And I made a note here. He almost seems more human than Seven. Like he's been here for one day
and he's more
less rude. He's more emotional. He's enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, he obviously has a lot. Like the doctor does say he's only 27% Borg,
right.
Whereas she was 100% Borg and slowly becoming human.
Right.
But it's a confusing thing because he looks more Borg than she does. But he's acting more human than she is. It's an odd balance there.
I love the line that he says to Janeway. She's like, well, how are you getting along? And he's like, well, I've assimilated information on a vast variety of subjects, including particle physics, comparable humanoid anatomy, warp field theory, and the culinary delights of the Delta Quadrant. And so then Seven's like, he's been hanging out with Neelix. You know? Yeah. He asks Janeway, how is your assessment of me? And Janeway's like, no, I just wanted to meet you. Oh, well, in that case, may I ask you for permission to be excused? And so not only is he more human? He's more polite than Seven.
Much more polite.
Has permission to be excused to assist Lieutenant Torres to increase the efficiency of the Poussard collectors. And the look on Janeway's face in this entire scene is like, wow, why can't Seven be like you? This is like this. And she's very happy.
It also came to my mind that, all right, so this Borg drone is 27% Borg and what's left, 73% human. But the Borg drone was actually created from Seven and the Doctor. So it's not like he got more humanity, you know, from Dad.
Well, let's be precise here. It's not Seven and the Doctor. It's Seven and Mulcahy with the Doctor's mobile emitter.
That's
it's the
true.
Mobile emitter. It has nothing to do with the Doctor except
that's
for his.
True. Yeah. The cortex. That's right. Okay. Because my mind was like, how did the combining the Doctor's mobile emitter in Seven make
him
more
human. How did you get him more human yet? No, it's Mulcahy.
That helps a lot. That makes sense to me then. So he goes and Janeway goes, I want to know more about this guy. Like Seven's the one now who's cautious. She's like, she's worried. I don't know about this.
Did we talk about Janeway commending Seven on the job she's done teaching?
No, but she does. Yeah. She commends Seven on a great job. And Janeway asks, does he know about his Borg side yet? And Seven goes, nope, not yet. And Janeway wants to tell him, and Seven does not right now. She's worried.
Right.
And so Janeway says, well, he's going to have to know about this, the Borg side of his life someday. Like you're teaching him all this human stuff, Voyager information, but you're not teaching him about who the Borg are.
Right. Well, she says we can delay telling him for now, but he's becoming an individual and he has a right to know.
Yeah.
Right. So eventually we're going to have to tell him.
Yeah.
We jump to Cargo Bay 2 and I'm going to start calling him One instead of the drone now.
Great.
So One wants to assimilate more information and Seven says, you know, it's enough for one day. She teaches him how to say thank you. Mm-hmm. And she says, we must regenerate. And I love when he stepped into the alcove the wrong way.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, you must face outward.
And by the way, I just want to say, is that true? I feel like when we've gone on board ships before, we've seen them both ways. Like,
no. What are you talking about?
I think we have.
I know, Robbie.
Everybody out there, tell me the truth.
All right.
I feel like I've seen Borg not just standing outward, but many different.
Okay. Let's leave it up to the listeners and the viewers and see what they say. But I'm almost 100% positive. They're not.
It was a funny bit in the scene. Like, you know, he stands what looks like the wrong way, but it's not like that's a rule. I don't think. But anyway, we'll see. But it worked in the scene. It was funny.
So now they're standing in the regeneration chambers. And then One says, 7 of 9. Thank you. As they begin the regeneration cycle, and the look on Seven's face is she she kind of feels like a feeling of accomplishment and
very proud.
Proud, and she's.
And by the way, Jerry had a lot of great emotions, a lot of silent, very emotional acting in this episode. I thought she did a great job.
This episode was the most acting that Jerry has had to do up to date, I think. Yeah. You know,
in terms of emotional levels. Yeah.
Oh my
God. Instead of just the Borg.
Instead of just like blah, 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 blah. Exactly. She actually has range in this episode, which is so wonderful to see. So as they close their eyes to regenerate, the camera pushes in to see a new set of blinking lights start blinking.
And the music changes to ominous music. And you're like, uh-oh.
And the ominous music cuts to an exterior space shot of a Borg sphere. Then you see the interior of the Borg sphere and you hear the Borg voice. A Borg proximity signal has been detected.
But I thought it was super cool because we go inside that Borg sphere and everything is round inside. We're not used to that. So I thought that was cool. It was really.
Yeah, and the interior looks like it sort of looked like an apple. An apple core like kind apple of a thing. Core. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then we hear that the Borg proximity signal has been detected. Alter course to intercept. So now we're in trouble.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Cargo Bay 2, 7 awakes to see the captain, Tuvok, and a large security team. The entire security team is there.
They're armed now, waiting for her to wake up.
And Janeway's not happy. Look on her face. She goes, Janeway says that one has transmitted a Borg proximity signal. Wake him. And upon questioning, one is very innocent. He's like, no, I did not do that. And after a scan, we realized that even though his transceiver was deactivated 2 days ago, his cranial implants adapted and created a secondary transceiver.
Oh, man.
I know. It just ruins it. It's like, come on. He didn't give up. He didn't give up any of that. He's doing so well.
He didn't do it on purpose. He didn't do it on purpose.
But Janeway's okay. She's quick to forgive. And then we, on long-range sensors, have detected a trans-warp conduit. A ship is approaching. And one wants to
meet them.
Borg. He wants to meet them. And Janeway tells Seven, okay, it is now time to show.
He needs to know about the Borg.
What the Borg are all about. Right.
Exactly. So we go to Astrometrics and there's all this Borg data on the big screen and he's downloading all of the data about the Borg.
Right.
And he's fascinated and excited and in awe. And he says he wants to experience the hive mind. Yeah. And then Janeway's like, well, you'll no longer be unique.
Right.
And he says, and that is undesirable.
Right.
Which I thought was an interesting argument. Like, you know, is it undesirable to want to be part of something? Mm-hmm. There is a human pull to that idea as well, to be connected in one of many things. So
on a lighter note, what is going on with Janeway's hair?
Hair. I knew you were going to say hair.
I knew it.
So fluffy.
What is a 70s Charlie's Angels thing going on? Yeah, I mean, only in certain angles though, Robbie, like when she walks, cause I rewound into the scene inside the, cause I kept saying, did they shoot this on two separate days? You know, the scene in Cargo Bay 2, and then they go right into Astrometrics. It should be
the same, but it was shot on separate days.
I guess. Sure. I mean, because her hair
just in this scene goes really big.
But what's crazy though, Robbie, is when she walks into the first few shots in Astrometric, it's not crazy, but from a certain angle, when she's talking to one, it gets poofy. Like within the same scene, it changes. It's just
really big.
I don't know what the heck happened.
Really big hair.
Yeah.
Janeway asks one if he'll help Voyager resist them. Mm-hmm. And he asks Seven.
Seven. Yes.
Do you want to rejoin the collective?
Yeah. Do you wish to rejoin the collective?
Yeah. And Seven pauses, and then her answer is, Voyager is my collective, which I love. I love that.
Great line.
She really commits to Voyager here.
Yeah, she does.
We hear battle stations. Yeah.
He doesn't commit yet. He says, I will need time to assimilate this information.
He won't, but Seven does.
Seven does
says,
all the way.
Voyager is my collective. Seven and One are walking down the hall, and they basically discuss anxiety is what this scene is about. The fear of assimilation, you know, she tries to explain to him what you're feeling is anxiety. And he says, do you feel it too? And she says, yes.
But what I love about her line is when she says, you are experiencing an emotion, anxiety. It is only temporary. Mm. That is the key line right there.
Yeah.
That's the lesson right there, you know, in this part of this episode.
Yeah.
Anxiety. It's only temporary. And too many people feel the anxiety and they don't realize that it will pass, you know, and people get all worked up over it. And that's it's true. Just temporary. Turbolift there. One asks, what will happen now? Will Voyager be destroyed? And we open up on, actually we have an exterior shot of the Borg sphere moving towards the nebula. And now we're on the bridge. Seven says one needs to help enhance our shields.
By the way, so when we come back on the bridge, Seven and One are stepping out of the turbo lift with Janeway and a couple other security people. And I said to myself, wait a minute, how did
Janeway get there before?
Just left Seven and One in a turbo lift alone.
Yeah.
And now they're stepping out of it. And she said in the turbo lift, deck one. They're headed to the bridge. So there's a bump in there for me. Like Janeway should not be in the same turbo lift. You know,
wasn't in the turbo lift with them though.
Yeah, she was. I'm pretty sure they all walked out of the turbo lift at the top of the scene, but
what? Again, no, it was just, okay. Walking down the hallway, talking about anxiety. There's no Janeway there. Janeway took another route and got there before them, which is kind of implausible.
No, that's what I'm saying. When Seven and One step out of the turbo lift.
Janeway steps out with them?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. There's a huge hole there then.
Yeah, that was a bit of a mistake.
Oops.
Anyway, they all step out. They head to the battle stations. One is hearing the Borg collective in his mind, and so does Seven. And she says, resist that voice.
Right.
Resist it. And he puts his tubes ultimately into the console. Voyager at this point has been tractored or something.
There's a tractor beam that's been activated, right? But when he does help out, he changes the shield. He remodulates the shields. Mm-hmm. And that causes us to break free from this tractor beam.
Yep.
So Janeway says, can you enhance our phasers? And he says, yes. And Janeway says, okay, well, once he's done with that, target their propulsion system. And Mr. Paris, be prepared to jump to warp. And you're like, did you say yes, ma'am? Maybe you just nodded.
I don't know if I did. Yeah.
Okay. So as Voyager fires at the sphere inverts our phaser with a feedback pulse. So it sort of bounces back at
ourselves.
Yeah.
And the ship is
takes out our warp drive. And now One says that Voyager's technology is limited. He can't enhance it any further, but he says that he can interface with the collective. If he can do that, he can disrupt their vessel from within. And Seven looks at him and says, no, they will try to assimilate you. And he says very quickly, they will fail. Like he knows he's.
And then he hits his wrist with his own internal transporter beam.
Yeah.
And uses what Janeway said earlier, he transports himself right inside the.
Right.
The
so before sphere. He does that, Janeway says to Harry to lock onto the drone. But my note here is that you don't see Harry at all in the first half of this whole battle scene in the bridge. Yeah. It's just all the left side of the bridge, really, where Tuvok is and Janeway and you are, but you don't see. So I'm wondering, like, did they not even have me in this scene? But then later you do see a little bit of Harry there.
You were there. But I was just, they shot it all, but didn't put it in the cut or something.
They didn't put it in the cut. They didn't put it in the cut. I thought I was on vacation. But yeah, so he beams himself over and it's, what was he using when those Borg drones were coming up on him? Was he just repelling them with his?
That's what it is. He doesn't even raise his arms.
It's he didn't just do some anything. Kind of energy. They just get some energy just, shoots they out. They fly. They go falling down. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. He does end up interfacing, and he starts steering that Borg sphere into the nebula.
Takes over the controls and starts driving the sphere towards the nebula.
Yeah.
Great space shot.
Yeah.
As it starts to enter the nebula, and you see it just crumbling and falling apart.
Yeah.
And exploding.
Yeah. Huge explosion.
And I said to myself, when the thing exploded, I'm like, oh no, the Doctor's hollow emitter is inside that thing and it's done.
Did you really think that at that time?
I did. Yeah. I was like, Doc is, I was in my head. I'm like, how did we get the hollow emitter? I know we get
you
it back.
You knew that wasn't going to happen, but you still thought it. That's
but
cute.
I thought it like that. I didn't know how it was possible for that to survive.
How do we retrieve it?
Yeah. When we go back on the bridge, Seven is very emotional here.
Yeah. But Harry detects that, hey, one life sign. He's still alive. Beam him to sick bay. Seven goes down to sick bay and he's lying on the bio bed, and he, you know, his body plating is still, he's not crunched. He's still the same, mm-hmm. but that you do see some really major wounds, on his head. So clearly,
and the doctor says his biological systems are failing, mm-hmm. but the Borg systems are regenerating here.
Right. Right. And the doctor says, I have to perform surgery on his other systems to make sure his biological functions mm-hmm. to make sure he's okay. And when he reaches in, his force field comes up to stop the doctor. And Seven is like, no, let the doctor help you. And he says, well, no, when I interface with the Borg, they now know who I am. And they're going to keep chasing you. They're going to keep pursuing Voyager to get to me. And so I can't let that happen. I can't let them, you know, harm yeah. you. And so he refuses the surgery. And wow, that was, I don't know. It was very sad. It was very sad. It brought me to tears. And
her lines are like, you must comply, you know? Yeah. And she says, please, you are hurting me, yeah. which kind of is a callback to earlier.
Yes.
You're hurting me.
His final line.
What does he say?
He says, you will adapt. Like that. Do you remember that? Yeah.
I do now. Like, yeah. Very sad. And Jerry did a great job. She was very affected by his death there.
Yeah. Yeah.
She kind of wanders in circles in the sick bay for a moment.
She doesn't know what to do. She's just
lost.
She's beside herself. Because in reality, this was really her kid, you know, if you think about it, if you look at it that way.
And she saw herself in him in many ways, which this mirror shot we're about to get to is very much a part of that. Who is she? You know, she was connecting with a side of herself.
I think the audience has already bought into when they're watching this. They're excited that this could be our secret weapon. You know, like this mm-hmm. this crew member is going to be this will put us on top where nobody's going to mess mm-hmm. with us. We have the most advanced Borg ever as part of our crew. So you start feeling for this character. You're mm-hmm. cheering for this character. And then he mm-hmm. sacrifices himself for the crew and he dies and you're just gutted. You're absolutely gutted that this has happened. Right. And then the scene in Cargo Bay 2 when she goes to turns off the power
to his alcove.
Yeah, to his alcove.
Sad shot. And then she ends up stepping over to the mirror. So we go from the first shot of the episode in the mirror when she's smiling.
Yep.
To the last shot of the episode in the mirror when she's just crushed.
Yeah.
So it's a nice bookend visually, I think, the mirror moment. Really strong episode, really strong.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My theme is regardless of what you're born into, the person that you were born as, that you have a choice in life. That's my theme. That regardless of whether you're born a Borg, whether you're born a human, whoever you're born, that you have a unique choice that you can make to be whoever you want to be. That was my takeaway. What about you?
A couple things. One lesson is the lesson that how Neelix treated this new organism individual. He wasn't afraid. He had open arms. He embraced this new Borg, you know, and that's something that everyone can learn when dealing with strangers. You know, it's better to have your arms outstretched with your hands open, not clenched fists trying to fight, you know? So that's one lesson. And then the other lesson is the lesson of loss of someone that you are familiar with, either family member or friend, acquaintance, when they pass, that you have to know that or find solace in the fact that you will adapt. You will get, you know, you'll get over it at some point. You'll be able to get through this difficult period. So, so that's my other lesson too.
Nice.
That, you know, no matter what happens.
What's your score on this out of 10?
I'm going to give it an 8.5. I'm going to give it 8.5 on this one. Nice. So yeah. How about you?
I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 7.5. I enjoyed it a lot. I really did. I don't know, but it did feel a bit like an outlier in some weird way, like kind of a little disconnected from Harry or Tom or B'Elanna. They were all around, I guess, but I felt like there wasn't a group feeling to this. It was very much seven and one. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of times we'll be in the briefing room, we'll all have a job to do or have a point of view about it. And this one, even though we popped in and out, felt like we were all very disconnected from one's journey and the drone's journey. Maybe Neelix for a moment or two, maybe the doctor for a moment or two, a bit here and there. So that's why I give it a 7.5. But still a good episode, very moving. And I thought Jerry did a phenomenal job. Best performance that I think she's given so far.
Definitely.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun. What is next week?
Next week's episode is Extreme Risk.
Okay.
We will see all of you next week for our recap and discussion of Extreme Risk. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.